Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Relations between Israel and the Biden administration continue to deteriorate after Israel killed 7 relief workers for World Central Kitchen in Gaza. Israel has taken responsibility for the bombing, which it said was based on faulty intelligence. But reaction in the U.S. and the rest of the world has been increasing hostility to the Jewish state. What happens now in U.S.-Israel relations? What does all of this mean for the Gaza war? Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal opinion pages, and I'm here with my colleagues Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. So Israel has apologized for the bombing, and it says it's conducting an investigation. But let's listen to Jose Andres, the celebrity chef who runs World Central Kitchen and whose workers were killed, saying the strike was deliberate, followed by U.S. spokesman for the State Department, Matthew Miller, on Israel's accountability.
We were targeted deliberately, nonstop, until everybody was dead in this convoy. This happened over more than 1.5, 1.8 kilometers. So this was not just a bad luck situation where, we dropped the bomb in the wrong place. This was over 1.5, 1.8 kilometers with a very defined humanitarian convoy that had signs in the top, in the roof, that cannot be the role of an army that has hundreds of drones above Gaza.
The chief of staff for the Israeli Defense Forces has come out and said it was a misidentification. So I took that to mean while they were targeting those cars, they did not believe that it was the World Central Kitchen that was operating those vehicles at the time. But that said, we need to wait and see the outcome of this investigation to know with any confidence what it was that happened, and we're going to wait to do that. But it doesn't really matter how they made the mistake. At the end of the day, you have 7 dead aid workers who are there trying to deliver humanitarian assistance. So whatever the mistake that happened inside the IDF, it's unacceptable. And they need to do better, and they need to put measures in place to ensure that it doesn't happen again.
Harsh criticism from Jose Andres, the World Central Kitchen head, and no doubt painful, terrible episode, 7 innocent aid workers killed. It truly awful. And it's understandable as anger. But as you heard from the State Department spokesman, there doesn't seem to be any evidence that this was deliberately an attempt to kill the aid workers. The U.S. seems to be agreeing, or at least believing, the Israel point that it was a case of mistaken identity. Kim, if nothing else, what we know is it certainly isn't in Israel's interest to have done this, because the condemnation has made life more difficult for its campaign in Gaza.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot we still don't know about here. Netanyahu came out and apologized. They said that they will investigate it, check it. There's going to be a full review. I do think that this is very important because it is what distinguishes a democracy, the speed at which Israel came out and admitted fault for this horrible tragedy and said that there would be a review and that it would be made transparent and that people would know what would happen. This is, I would say, in contrast, for instance, to that hospital bombing very early in the conflict in which Hamas didn't take responsibility and attempted to pin it on Israel. Very tragic, though, and it just comes at a terrible moment because obviously it's a moment in which Joe Biden, unfortunately, is caving to pressure on his left already. He's worried about the upcoming election. He'd been distancing himself somewhat from Israel's war effort. He now came out with his own statement, which was also incredibly harsh. He said he was outraged and heartbroken over this. He said Israel has not done enough to protect aid workers. Incidents like yesterday's simply should not happen. Israel has not done enough to protect civilians. And this gets into growing questions over Israel's thought of going into Rafah. There's a big push in Washington to try to dissuade them from doing it. But between Biden and a lot of heaping of scorn by other world leaders, this is certainly a new problem Israel has to confront as this conflict continues to drag on.
Yeah, there's no downplaying the tragedy here and the mistake. And yet, I recall the episode in August 2021 when the U.S., on its way out of Afghanistan, mistakenly fired a Hellfire missile in Kabul, which was aimed supposedly at ISIS Khorasan planners who had killed the Americans as we attempted to leave, but instead mistakenly hit a family and killed 10 civilians, including as many as 7 children. That was a mistake. As the Pentagon acknowledged at the time, we now assess it is unlikely that the vehicle and those who died were associated with ISIS-K or were a direct threat to U.S. forces. None of that is to deny the tragedy of the event in Gaza, but it does point out that in wartime, these kinds of mistakes happen.
Yes, it does. That was a good example. Because remember, Paul, initially the U.S. Pentagon said it was a righteous strike. You know, it took a little while for the real story to come out. And I don't recall outrage then on the president's part. I don't recall anyone paying a price for this. And I can understand mistakes do happen like this. That's why war is so brutal, because innocent people get killed. But I think that's why you have to be careful about not self-righteously denouncing, you know, someone for a difficult decision because it didn't turn out well. You try to minimize the threat and so forth. I mean, I think Joe Biden's outrage would be easier to take if he were clear in articulating goals. Like he said, Israel should be able to defend itself. Kind of the same line he's taking with Ukraine. He doesn't say Hamas needs to be destroyed or it has to win. And I think it erodes Israel's moral credibility when it's constantly being sapped. Now, on the flip side, the Biden administration is taking flack from the pro-Palestinian crowd for continuing to send weapons over there. But I think when you don't lend moral support to an ally, that kind of aid becomes jeopardized itself. And I would like to see the president more forthright in what he wants the outcome to be. Does he want Hamas to be left there with a nucleus? Does he want Hamas to be destroyed? I'd like to see him be more clear about what we're aiming for with one of our allies.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have more on the tragic bombing this week in Gaza and its implications for Israel and U.S.-Israel relations when we come back.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strassel here on our daily Potomac Watch podcast for Wall Street Journal Opinion. Let's build on the point that Bill made, Kim, in the last section where he mentioned the pressure building on President Biden through this episode on the left. Of course, you have Jose Andres, the leader of World Central Kitchen, appearing everywhere, talking about his claim that Israel did this deliberately. You have the Democratic left becoming increasingly impatient. Ben Rhodes, who was one of the architects of Barack Obama policy in the Middle East, which does not make him a moral authority in any or strategic authority in any sense. But he says he was highly critical of Biden, saying as long as there's no consequences against Israel for what it's done, then his rhetoric criticizing Israel means nothing. You have Jill Biden letting it be known, or somebody letting it be known, that Jill Biden had told Joe, you got to bring the war to an end.
Make it stop.
Thanks for that. Yeah, make it stop. Well, thanks for that. We all want it to stop. The question is how you do it. And then Chris Van Hollen, the Maryland Center, who's been one of the leading anti-Israel voices in the U.S. Senate, saying, I hope this will be the moment where the president changes course, quote unquote. He wants the administration to impose restrictions on weapon deliveries to Israel from the U.S. I guess my question politically, Kim, is this pressure going to make any difference in terms of the ultimate U.S. policy of support for Israel? In other words, could Biden turn?
That is the fear. And by the way, I would disagree with Mr. Rhodes that rhetoric alone is not damaging. As we were just discussing, I think that Joe Biden's comments distancing himself from Netanyahu and the very harsh criticism that he has ladled out of late is, in fact, very difficult because, as one of its strongest allies, it's a signal to other world leaders to back off as well, too, and it makes Israel increasingly isolated. So the rhetoric is itself a problem. The fear is that it grows into actual policy changes. And you mentioned Ben Holland, Chris Coons, who's actually been one of the bigger backers of Israel in Congress. He's a senator. He came out today and said that if Netanyahu were to order the Israeli Defense Forces into Rafah at scale and make no provisions for civilians or humanitarian aid, that he would vote to condition future aid to Israel. You've got also news reports, which I find very concerning. This has all been a discussion about the next vote on the next tranche of Israel aid. But obviously, there are arms deals that are also in the works. One of them involves an $18 billion deal to transfer, among other things, F-15 fighters and munitions. Apparently, the president sent informal notification of this deal to Congress, and he so far has not gotten sign-off from the two Democrats. So word is that when this happens under the Arms and Export Control Act, the president has to notify Congress, and then the top players on the Senate Foreign Relations and House Foreign Affairs Committee have to say yes. The Republicans have supposedly said yes, but Ben Cardin in the Senate and Gregory Meeks in the House apparently have not given their approval. So we are already potentially moving to a situation where Israel could be struggling to get even prior agreed equipment over to them because of the politics here in the U.S.
That's, of course, Bill, the pressure from the Democratic left, for the most part. The people we've been citing are, by and large, on the left of the party. And yet, when you look at the polling that I've seen, the U.S. support, public support for Israel against Hamas seems to be holding quite well at about two-thirds of the public. The Wall Street Journal poll on Michigan this week shows that even in Michigan, which is, of course, a locus of so-called Dearborn Democrats who are often, or many of them are Arab Americans, but also young people who disagree with the U.S. policy. But overall in the state, the pro-Israel view still prevails by a substantial margin. So my point is that the president would pay a price politically if he indeed were to start conditioning military aid to Israel on certain kinds of behavior, or if he were to attempt to block Israel from finishing the job against Hamas.
Yeah, I think it's part of his tendency to kind of take a position, then mitigate it. Like with Ukraine, he gives them enough to keep fighting, but I don't think he's on the record said Ukraine must win. He's been saying that we must not allow Russia to win, but he doesn't say we need Ukraine to win. And the same thing here. I think he's listening to the wrong people. Paul, I look at the polls the same way. The majority of Americans can distinguish between the state of Israel and a group that launches attacks, you know, slaughtering grandmothers and teenage girls and babies, and they know which side they're on. I think it would be a stronger play. And I think Biden had it originally, you know, he went over to Israel and visited during wartime. If he had stuck with that and tried to marginalize the protesters. But now I think he's going to get the worst of both worlds because the people like us who want to see a strong and unequivocal defense of Israel and want to see them win and actually destroy Hamas and get hostages back, including the four Americans they hold. You know, he's criticized from the right by them, but the left is kind of on to his game. They're not going to be appeased by rhetoric. They're only going to be appeased if Joe Biden really takes kind of the view you have to cut off aid and so forth, which I'm not sure he'll do quite to what they want. So he's in a position where both sides can kind of feel enraged. And of course, the left is still going to march on the convention. There's going to be a lot of problems. That's the passionate cause of the moment for the left. And I don't think it's going to abate.
Well, we've been talking about the domestic and political implications of all of this. Of course, there are global political implications, strategic, especially in the Middle East, which is still in a perilous position. We had the apparent Israeli strike this week, Kim, against Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps building and generals in Syria. Targeted strike that killed top generals. Iran has vowed to retaliate. We have on Friday the annual Iranian Al-Quds Day, which might be a day they launch reprisals at Israel, either directly or through their proxies. You've got a very tense position on the northern border of Israel with Lebanon and Hezbollah. You have restive population in the West Bank, Palestinians, and then, of course, the Gaza war is far from over. So abandoning Israel, or seeming to abandon Israel, seeming to stop it from finishing its job, would have real implications for what message we were sending the world about how steadfast the U.S. is on behalf of a beleaguered ally.
Yes, and potential implications for us. I would note that the Iranian leadership made clear that while they believe that Israel is behind this, that they view America as taking responsibility as well, too. They said America will have to pay a price for this. We've already had our troops under assault in bases that we have in Syria and Iraq from proxies funded by Iran with drone strikes and others. Three U.S. troops killed back on a base in Jordan in a strike. And I think we can expect as well that those attacks are going to ramp up and maybe the area become even more dangerous for those that we have now trying to keep things calm. So I think that not just implications for what has been a conflict that's largely been centered in Gaza spilling out over the borders, but further bringing the United States in. And this is what happens when you don't show strong deterrence and you don't stand by your allies. You just make yourself more of a target.
All right, we'll take another break. When we come back, we'll talk about Donald Trump in Israel. What would he do differently, if anything, when we come back?
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Don't forget, you can reach the latest episode of Potomac Watch anytime. Just ask your smart speaker. Play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast. That is, Play the Opinion Potomac Watch podcast.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Jugo with the Potomac Watch podcast, Wall Street Journal opinion pages with Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. And let's pivot to what the leading political challenger to President Biden, Donald Trump, has been saying about the war in Gaza and events. And he made a call to Hugh Hewitt's radio show on Thursday morning. And was asked, of course, about events in Israel. And what he said was he thinks it's just taking too long for the Israeli government to finish the job. He said that he wants Israel to go ahead because I'm not sure that I'm loving the way they're doing it, because you have to have a victory and it's taking a long time. And the other thing I hate, they put out tapes all the time. Every night they're releasing tapes of a building falling down. They shouldn't be releasing tapes like that. That's why they're losing the PR war. Israel is absolutely losing the PR war, end quote. Kim, it's not really grasping the nettle there, except I guess he's not saying they shouldn't go into Rafah or not commenting on any details. He's just saying they got to move faster.
It's classic Donald Trump. This is taking too long, people. I mean, one thing he also said in that, and I do think it was a very key phrase. He said they need to finish what they started, which to me signals that Donald Trump is sticking with Israel and saying that he has their back in terms of their objective. But yes, his complaint, as is often Donald Trump when it comes to international conflicts, he doesn't like anything that's drawn out. He does, I will give him this, he does understand that Americans also prefer to see conflicts end quickly. This has always been one of the struggles when the United States in any way is engaged in a foreign conflict, is keeping political will on side. But that's what we look to leaders to do, to explain the consequences of early abandonment, not really Donald Trump's strong suit. I think this distinguishes somewhat from Joe Biden. He isn't being outwardly critical other than a timeline perspective. And his professed worry that if this drags on, it will be more difficult for Israel to sustain it. And there is a reality to that.
You know, I think it's interesting to me, Bill, that he hasn't criticized Biden on Israel. You know, he's kind of stayed away from saying that Biden should be more steadfast in support. He hasn't said that Biden hasn't made the point about Hamas holding U.S. hostages. Why do you think that is, Bill?
I don't know. I assume that bolstering his gut instinct to side with Netanyahu is the fact that Biden is being criticized for not supporting them strong enough, especially in rhetoric. So I would have expected him to say more. I think he will, as he realizes. I think to Donald Trump, a lot of it is political. If he thinks that support for Israel, strong support, is anti-Biden, I think he'll embrace it more fully. But you point out the politics are very odd because, you know, the demonstrations, people blocking airports like JFK on behalf of Gaza, a lot of those people that are very passionate would, I think, be Bobby Kennedy's supporters. And he's anti-Biden. He's been critical, been very strong.
Yeah, pro-Israel.
Yeah, it reminds me when I was in Afghanistan during the first war, the Afghans loved the Rambo movies. And then they found out one of the ones, maybe the last one, was filmed in the Zionist entity. And it kind of dampened their enthusiasm. And I kind of feel the protesters, I don't think most of them know Bobby Kennedy's position, but it makes for strange bedfellows. I think one of the things that's been shattered in addition to the two-state solution is kind of, unfortunately, a bipartisan consensus on Israel. I think the left is splitting the Democratic Party from Israel. And I think that's going to make for all sorts of interesting politics, especially in 2024. And I do think Trump was on to it was a political point, not a substantive point, about taking long. You know, when I was with Bush in the White House, he always said, you know, Bubba wants those troops home. And it took 3 years to get a successful surge strategy. Time is generally not on the fighter's side, the people trying to defend themselves against terrorists. So if that's, as Kim said, just a kind of an analysis of the fact, that's one thing. If it signals, well, maybe I'll get bored with support if this goes on too long, that's a very different thing entirely.
Kim, it is also in Joe Biden's interest that this end soon, right? Because the sooner it does, the conflict in Gaza, the sooner he can pursue the deal he wants between Israel and Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia to conclude a peace deal that would have them join the Abraham Accords. That's still very much on the minds of the Biden White House. Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, was supposed to travel over there. So they still want that to be done. And then, of course, for the reasons Bill has described about the pressure from the Democratic left, they want this done well before the Democratic convention in August, which could be quite a damaging spectacle of internal Democratic division.
Sure. This president has all kinds of reasons to want this done. I mean, one, obviously, he would just like this conflict to be over. It's one more overseas distraction. He was already dealing with Ukraine, trying to keep support marshaled to continue getting aid to that ally. This is one more conflict that is in many ways spiraling out of his control. So you get that done, and not only do you take it off the balance sheet, maybe you even get a win after it, as you said, with a peace deal. But also, this is just a president who prefers to talk about domestic issues. He would much rather be doing tours of the country, bragging about the infrastructure money he put out, and talking about abortion than he would be foreign policy issues. I don't know if he's going to get that wish. Israel's been pretty clear that this is going to take some time. Donald Trump's advice to Israel notwithstanding, I would wager that that country understands that unless you actually complete the mission and essentially make it so that Hamas cannot reconstitute itself and repeat another October 7th, then all of this has not been worth it. So, I mean, this could still go on.
You were already at the six-month mark here since October 7th. And in that sense, it is the longest war in Gaza by far that has been fought after a spate of Hamas or Islamic Jihad attacks on Israel. And this time Israel does seem determined to eliminate Hamas. And I think the question is how much time it takes and in what manner will it be accomplished. Thanks, Kim, and thanks, Bill. We appreciate it. We're here every day on Potomac Watch, and we hope to see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.